Blog Talk Radio.
From Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado, your boy Tony Pennycow from Philadelphia.
And we're coming at you with another live edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show, Fight Talk Unlimited, whatever the frick you want to call us. I don't care. Anyway, we're guestless tonight, if you want to call it that. So it's just going to be Tony and I shooting the shit and talking about the
fantasy.
And,
it's good though, because we do have a lot of fights to break down, so we can sit down and go over a lot of things here. We got some guys that I've been reading about that I'd like to give my brilliant perspective on. And like I was saying at the beginning of the before we went on the air, Rich, I've been really into the weather the last few days to the point where I was going to call Dr. Jack Kevorkian and have him put me to sleep. If anybody knows, Rich, you know what I was for Halloween last week, Mr. Dennis Rodman. Well, it wasn't a brilliant idea, I can't remember the STD. I was sitting with Carmen Electra all weekend, so we knew that wasn't the cleanest thing in the world to do. But no, this past weekend, I hadn't been feeling well since midweek, but I just kept rushing it and just trying to doing as much as I can in the least amount of time as I could. And now, in hindsight, it's probably not a smart idea to be running around in late October wearing nothing but a basketball jersey, basketball shorts, and a grass hula skirt. Standing outside for extended periods of time, and it was just dumb. So by the time Sunday rolled around, I was sick as a dog, and I missed a couple of days of work this week, and I think they were thankful not to put up with my shit all for a few days because I'm a pain in the ass.
Should have been a hula skirt.
What?
You
shooting a polar bear? No, polar bear. But Mr. Rodman actually brought me, I was a finalist for the $1,000 prize at the club I was at, but once again, did not win it, so I'll be bringing back possibly my greatest costume ever next year just for the contest. So I would tell people to log on to my Facebook, but there's a rumor going around that I might be getting rid of Facebook.
Uh-oh.
Now, for those of you listening, that only rumor, I'm just doing that to fuck with people. You know, I like playing head games. I had a few people that were pissing me off, so I wouldn't respond to any of their emails, any of their text messages, any of their posts for about a week now. And then I just put a comment on there about maybe 10 minutes ago saying, yeah, I'm keeping myself MIA on here for a while, and I think I might just delete this account. And I said, bye. That's all I said.
Yeah.
I'm not going to delete. I took my pictures down, or at least my profile
picture. You're trying to scare your massive wave of fans, Tony?
Not my massive wave of fans, my massive wave of annoying friends that have been pissing me off. My massive wave of fans, and I got one of them listening tonight. That's my girl, Double T. What's going on out there, Double T? Hope you're listening. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to have a lot to talk about tonight. My massive wave of fans know how to get a hold of me. It's just some of the annoying people that I don't want to deal with. You know, I'm fucking with them a little bit. You know, playing mind games with them.
Wow. Speaking of playing mind games, Freddie Roach is trying to play mind games with the Floyd Mayweather camp. And he says the Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather Jr. fight will never happen. And we have non-exclusive footage. Actually from BloodyElbow.com. And it's labeled Freddie Roach Mayweather versus Pacquiao will never happen. And it's an interview from some guy who will announce his name in a minute. It's in depth.
Grand Bank is brought to you by Lowe's. For all your home improvement needs, Lowe's, let's build something together.
The likelihood a fight between Manny and Floyd Mayweather Jr. happens ever would be what?
I don't think it'll ever happen. No. It's going to be one of those fights that I'm going to say.
Never, period.
It would happen then. $40 million guarantee to both sides, plus pay for due. Come on, how can you turn that down? Blocking the disturbance. This is our livelihood. We can take care of our families for the rest of our life. The world knows that Floyd is ducking Manny Pacquiao at this point. And I think that's going to be the bottom line. I think Floyd's going to be content with fighting mediocre type opponents with styles that he knows he can beat, and stay away from southpaws like Manny Pacquiao would see.
It's been reported that November 13th was supposed to be the fight between Manny and Floyd Mayweather Jr. instead of Margarito, and I've learned that details of the fight with Mayweather for November 13th were worked out all the way down to you and Manny agreeing to let Floyd walk into the ring second. So why was it ultimately unable to happen?
Well, for some reason, Floyd all of a sudden came up and that there was no negotiations. No one had talked to him. Who were they negotiating with? Al Heyman, who's his advisor. Lenny Elby, who's his, go-to boy. I'm not in that circle, so I don't know. But there was definitely negotiations. We wanted that fight so badly. We agreed to everything. And it didn't happen because Floyd doesn't want to fight Manny. That's the bottom line.
How do you explain the initial reluctance on Manny's part to agree to the blood testing?
Originally, he didn't agree to that because the day before the Eric Morales fight, the last fight we lost, we had made a mistake and we thought we had the blood testing done for the Nevada Commission, and we didn't. We had to give blood the day before, and that's why he lost that fight in his mind. When he gives blood, I lose him for about 2 days. So it's in his mind, it's there. So it's like, does sex really hurt a fighter before a fight? If in your head you've been, brainwashed that, you know, like I was, 6 weeks before a fight, you're not allowed to have sex, otherwise you're going to get weak legs and lose the fight. So I never had sex 6 weeks before all my fights. So I'm not a virgin, but I'm close. I'm lying, but...
So... that's your sixth head lesson and your update on why Freddie Roach doesn't think that fight's ever going to happen. Never. It was going to happen on November 13th.
I mean, going back to some of the things that I had to say before, I mean, I don't think it was going to happen like I said, Freddie is pinning the blame on Floyd. And, hey, man, he's got a very valid point. Floyd wants all the concessions to be the major star. But here's the problem, and I'm always going to harp back to the same two guys, maybe because these two guys were idols of mine growing up, Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. I mean, they figured out a way to, make their negotiations work. Floyd wants everything. He wants the ring size. He wants, the blood testing. He wants, coming in the ring second, whatever. I mean, it's getting to the point where it's like, you know what? Rich, and I'm going to throw two names out there. Say me and you were going to fight, all right? Just like we were supposed to 12 years ago. Say me and you were going to fight, and it was in the what?
Who says we ain't gonna someday?
We still might. Okay, just say we're gonna. Let's say it was going to be in the Nationals of 1998. Okay, now granted, college boxing is a little bit different because it's in the amateurs, but just say we're coming up for the national title. I had beaten Sweat and you had beaten Jordan. We're getting ready for our main event. Now, it's got to be a 50-50 split because neither of us were defending champion coming in. Or you say, I remember times where a guy that was a teammate of mine, for a couple of years, his name was Jason Pletcher, a very good friend of mine. He was fighting a kid from the Naval Academy, Todd Alexander. They were both defending national champions. Pletcher at 156, at 165, Alexander at 156. That was an even stakes fight. But then you have other times where it's, I'm stepping in there to fight a guy from a Navy named Cy Millay. Cy Millay was a defending two-time national champion when we went to fight. Okay, yeah, granted he is going to get, the top billing over I am. I'm kind of like the challenger coming in. Floyd doesn't want to, give up anything on like that, no matter who he fights. He could be fighting, the almighty Jesus Christ himself, and he's going to want to come in second and make the ring size and make Jesus go for a blood testing. That's just his ego. And I think his ego is ultimately, more than Pacquiao, more than anything, is going to be the deal breaker on this. Because when there is great risk, there's great reward. And there is a great risk for this fight, but I think Floyd is a little bit apprehensive. And I got some friends on here on Facebook and different forums that I participated in. They're dead set against what I'm saying here. They're thinking, hey, Floyd's the man. He's the greatest fighter on the planet today. He should make the rules. But no, it's not happening like that. In a professional football contest, the Eagles are playing the Colts this weekend. The Eagles are the home team. What's the only thing they get? Yeah, they get the crowd to their side, and they get the other team gets to call the coin toss. That's about it, even in the Super Bowl. One team's the home team, one team's the away team. That's it. They both got to play with the same football. They both got to play on a regulation field. Everything. It's not one team's going to go, well, I don't like the way the other team wears their shoulder pads. They got to wear different shoulder pads, or they got to use Nike shoulder pads, not Adidas shoulder pads. You can't make those types of concessions. You got to come to a common ground. That's what I think Floyd has to give up a little bit, and I don't think he wants to do that. I think he wants to play by his rules, and if it doesn't happen, he can walk away and say, well, I'm the greatest ever. Pacquiao ducked me. And he's going to try to throw that, undefeated record out there and say, Ray Leonard had a defeat early in his career. He lost to Roberto Duran. Roberto Duran, one of the greatest fighters of all time. Tommy Hearns had a defeat early in his career. He lost to Ray Leonard. Marvelous Marvin Hagler had some losses, to guys like, what the hell was his name, Willie the Worm Monroe and guys like that. So these guys obviously couldn't be great because they had losses on the record. And then he could say something, well, what about Rocky Marciano? He never had a loss on his record. Well, he fought older guys, or he fought guys that, were past their prime. Hey, Floyd, guess what?
Word on Rocky Marciano, by the way. The statue, the big statue that's supposed to go to the Brockton High School football field, is some massive controversy. They created a committee now to try and find out what the heck is going on, And then,
can I be on the committee?
You should be on the committee, actually.
Rich, you're absolutely right. I should be on the committee. You know why? Because I think I know more about a lot of Rocky's career than some of his family does. At least according to Nicky Sylvester, I know more than his brother Peter does.
Right? Anyway,
that
was a
punchline you were supposed to laugh.
No, oh, sorry.
That was a punchline you were supposed to laugh.
Sorry, I didn't cue the laugh track.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Basically, what I wanted to finish the story, basically, the whole statue deal, right? There's no money. There's no money in the WBC. And it was kind of ironic because I get the boxing alerts from Google. And I got one that says the statue committee is being formed to find out what the heck is going on. I got another one that said Jose Suleiman decided he was going to resign the other night.
I just saw that posting like 2 minutes ago. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all the things about Jose Suleiman retiring, resigning or whatever it is, he was corrupt as shit.
Well, he's been there like 32 years.
he's been there forever. But I remember when I first started getting into boxing back in like the early 90s and shit. Jose Suleiman was so, you know, Mike Tyson got out of jail and signed back with Don King. He became the number one contender without even fighting again in the WBC.
Yeah,
because he was King's boy, and Suleiman was King's boy.
It had something to do with the fight there. Who was going to challenge who when, whether he was going to have a mandatory defense or it was just going to be a voluntary defense.
Well, I'll tell you right now, as much as the WBC has been screwed up for years, I honestly think the WBA is worse. The WBA, they're the ones that invented all that super champion bullshit. So it's like, if a super champion or if two champions fight each other and this champion wins, with WBA and wins him a super champion.
World boxing
and
amalgamation.
Yeah, that's why I just was looking at the WBC's list of like champions and mandatory contenders. And I was like, shit, I'm like, I don't even think I know half these guys. I'm like, this is a little confusing.
How about the WBU? Did you ever hear of those guys?
I've heard that all of them.
The IRAPTQ. No. Just making that one up. But we ought to, too bad we didn't have a clip ready from our good old buddy there that we interviewed like 900 times now from Connecticut. John Scully. He loves to go off on how many belts there are and how bad it is for the sport.
Well, yeah, you know, he's 100% right.
Speaking of Manny Pacquiao, before we get too lost on the subject, Manny Pacquiao broke his sparring partner's nose in training camp. Did you hear this?
No, I didn't. But I mean, I mean, I've heard of shit like that happening before, so it doesn't 100% surprise me.
Sent his sparring partner packing right out the door, broke his nose. Basically, what happened was the guy. They're not even releasing his name. It's kind of funny. They don't want to embarrass the guy, but he left the camp. Break sparring partners. And here it is. There's a story. He was an African American. That's the only clue we're going to get.
Oh, okay. I mean, that just narrows it down.
If it's any indication of his readiness to fight Mexico's Antonio Margarito on November 13th, then the fighter of the decade is ready to rumble, according to his coach. So, this happened last week, I guess. Broke his nose, so he's out. Said in a report by some guy from the Philippines. And this guy also predicted that Manny is going to be ready to fight, and he'll knock Margarito out. Can you believe that?
Hey, you know, I love to talk. this weekend, while I'm home, you know, just resting up, still recouping while I'm not feeling too well, I'm going to write my preview for the Pacquiao-Margarito fight, and you guys know. I mean, anybody that's listened to me before, anybody that's read my articles before, don't make your bets until you read what I got to say. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you're pretty good. Even predicting some of the UFC fights. I'm not supposed to.
Hey, can I pick James Toney getting waffled in the first round?
Yeah, you did.
And then again, I picked the last one wrong. I picked Brock Lesnar to win. You know, that was just a tad bit off. But the worst prediction, I think, on a boxing one that I've ever done was Pacquiao and De La Hoya. I mean, I picked De La Hoya to win that because of his size, because of his superior strength, because of his left hand. I said, he's just good. And Pacquiao just waffled him, you know, beat the living shit out of him, beat him into retirement. That one I had wrong. Calzaghe Hopkins, I actually predicted a draw. And when I scored it a draw. And Calzaghe won a split decision. The Hopkins-Jones fight, I had Hopkins winning, but obviously not as convincing as he ended up winning by. Some of the other fights, you know, I think you did. I think you sent it to me. But that one guy said about my Cotto Judah preview from back in 07, like, well, you fucking knock Stradamus or something? Or you watch the fight before you paint the pick? I'm like, hey, look at the date that I submitted it. I submitted it a week before the fight, so shut the hell up. You know, and Rich, that's kind of the reason I got away from doing those fantasy dream fights, because we could debate all day who would win, Tyson or Ali, or, you know, Marciano and Dempsey, or, you know, the Sugar Ray Leonard and Floyd Mayweather, which I picked Leonard, by the way, 10th round knockout. You know, you could, you know, all day debate on them, but you'll never find out. You know, you'll never find out unless you do the computer fight like Ali and Marciano did back in the day. But once again, that's just what a computer's picking, just like me. Just like the computer that sits in between my ears that is badly damaged sometimes, called a brain, is just making a prediction. I like doing a prediction on a fight and then watching and see how it plays out to see how good I am.
Right. Well, we'll see this time. I'm sure you'll make the right decision. One of the guys from around my area, from my old area, not so much anymore, Edwin Rodriguez, a guy that really loved Rocky Marciano, is fighting tomorrow night in North Dakota. Edwin Rodriguez, he's 16-0. They call him La Bamba, and he would have played baseball if he stayed in the Dominican Republic, but he ended up coming to Massachusetts, and he settled in the Worcester area there. And now he's 16-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting James McGurk Jr., 22-2.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's 11 knockouts, one draw. And I got a funny Buddy McGurk story for the listeners here. It's pretty cool. One night I went to the Roxy in Boston, and I saw this kid fight named Dat Nguyen, who I haven't really checked on in a while, but he's been pretty good last I checked. But this little Vietnamese kid, lightweight, and so he boxed that night, and I was interviewing a few different people that were on the card, and I saw him boxing, so I got to interview this kid. You know, so right after he fought, I went over to his trainer, and there was this guy with glasses on, real kind of flashy sunglasses, and I didn't put two and two together, or whatever. I think somebody even told me about go ask Buddy or whatever, you know, talk to him. So I go over to his trainer and I ask him, you know, can I talk to Dat? And I went out to reach out to shake his hand, and he kind of had a weird reaction, like famous people do. But I had no idea who he was. I thought he was just some trainer, you know, trying to act flashy. So then I find out later that's Buddy McGurk. The Buddy McGurk is like a legendary trainer, legendary fighter. Been around all
great Buddy. If he didn't have shoulder damage and rotator cuff damage his entire career, he would have been, I mean, he was obviously a world champion several times, but he would have been, a pound-for-pound tremendous fighter. I mean, his first fight with Cornell Whitaker was damn close. I mean, he damn near had Whitaker beat. In the second fight, he could barely even use his left hand and couldn't throw his hook. That's like taking my hook away from me. I'm worthless.
Well, this is the big time for Edwin Rodriguez. He's had a lot of tough fights. I've seen him in person at the Roxy once as well, same place as I met Buddy. But I didn't even know it was Buddy until after Buddy was out of the building. You know, that's later on. Somebody's like, yeah, that was Buddy McGurk. I was like, what? I should have got an autograph. I'm looking for Dat Nguyen, who's like 4-0 at the time. I could have had an autograph from the legend on the program. But anyway, James McGurk Jr. is no slouch. He's got a lot of KOs. Half of his fights have ended in KOs. He hasn't really fought too many 8-rounders. He's only had 4 8-rounders. Now he's going to had 1 10-rounder. Now he's going to fight another 10-rounder here against Edwin Rodriguez. I'm thinking about it.
I got some other fights that we're going to talk about this weekend. I mean, for anybody that's a fight fan that has nothing to do on Saturday night, grab a couple beers, throw your feet up on the recliner, and then tune into one of the fight cards of this weekend. We got the Boxing After Dark card, which looks pretty damn interesting. That's the one with that Judah, if I'm not mistaken.
Congratulations, you've been collecting a receipt, a $1,000 Walmart.
We just got two of them in 20 seconds.
One
with Walmart gift cards.
Well, here's what we got here. We got 3 U.S. fight cards that I really want to touch on real quick. We got one at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, which the main event is Zab Judah, former world champion. Zab never, fought up to his potential. Had kind of a glass jaw, I'll give you that, but he still had unbelievable skills. I mean, he was, when he fought Floyd Mayweather, I mean, he was taking a 2 Floyd over the first 4 rounds. I think he swept the first 4 rounds, in my opinion, and then he just kind of fell apart, which he always seemed to do during his career. He is fighting an undefeated upstart fighter who I honestly don't know a whole lot about by the name of Lucas Martin Matisse, who is 27-0 with 25 knockouts. Not one opponent has gone past the 4th round. So, I mean, he's beating some decent guys. I'll bet on guys that are a little bit past their prime, like Vivian Harris and Rogelio Castaneda Jr., knocked them both out. Look at some of the other guys that he fought. He fought a lot, in Nevada. And then he fought mostly his career in Argentina. Now, here's the thing is, due to what he's going to have to do in this fight, to be totally honest, is to, take the first few rounds and use his speed just to keep Matisse at a distance and get him into those later rounds and try to drown him. Because this guy's never gone past 4 rounds. Now he's stepping up to a 12-round fight. I mean, that's pretty big right there. That's a real major step up in class. And also on the card, we got your boy Robert the Ghost Guerrero.
Schooling the other day. The guys we had on a few weeks ago. From White Collar Brawler. Have you been following that?
Right.
Have you been checking out all their episodes?
No, I haven't. I'll have to sit back maybe now that I got some time with November, which is kind of a slower month for me. So I'm not running to haunted houses every weekend or going to Halloween parties and getting my ass sick.
Yeah, well, you can go and spend $3,000 at Walmart now.
Yeah, right. We got a gift card.
We got 3 of them.
That's true.
But, the White Collar Brawler guys are really surprising me. These are obviously guys who know a lot about computers. And they're in a very techie area of the country in California. There's a lot of startups going on up there. And they get their stuff together, They're learning from the right people. They just sparred with their own coach a couple of weeks ago. It was a great episode. And, they're doing a lot of different things. They decided to come up with this event they call the Tech Beat-Up to get all the other geeks out there in their offices and cubicles to come out and fight. And the way they did it was they said, all right, we're going to set up a bounce house. And we're going to put the huge inflatable boxing gloves on, and we're going to call it Tech Beat Up. Everybody just release their frustrations and work out on each other and fight each other in the bounce house. So I can imagine that's going to be pretty entertaining. And hopefully nobody gets really badly hurt. It sounds like it could hurt people more than regular boxing. who knows? But I think it'd be funny. I hope they get some video from it. But all the other episodes, they show some really good sparring. One of the guys gave another sparring partner a bloody nose for the first time the other day. That was a pretty interesting episode. And they put out these 9-minute episodes like every week. So it takes like, I think they got 12 or 13 episodes now. It takes like, basically couple hours to catch up on what they got going on. But it's good. I mean, they got a good quality camera, and they just got sponsored by a clothing company. And I'd like to work with these guys, you know. It would be awesome. And I've already started, you know, getting my ankle back in shape. I tried to jump rope today. It didn't quite work out like I planned, but I'm still hitting the bag. And, man, I want to be a white-collar brawler now. I want to get in on that franchise.
I look the shit out of some office people.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, a couple of friends of mine that I go to Eagles games with, they were living up in Bloomsburg, PA, which is about an hour east of Lock Haven. You know, it always passed through Bloomsburg when I was going up to school. Well, when we were living up there, I guess the one bar, which was right a few miles from the university, was sponsoring this thing, and I think it was totally asinine, but they were doing it, on, like, Saturday nights, where they were having, like quote-unquote tough man competitions. But, you know, obviously they were being a little bit more safe than that. They'd have, like, the big, big, big gloves, and they'd have, like, headgear and mouthpieces and all that, and they would, you know, let you get in there. And they were dying for me to come up there and enroll in it like I was, you know, a complete novice. And they're like, dude, it'll be really funny. It's funny for you guys watching somebody get their head smashed in. I said, I kind of feel guilty. I'm like, yeah, but it'd still be funny. I'm like, yeah. Me going there, like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and then whack on someone with a left hook. I'm like, yeah, I think that would be absolutely hysterical. You know, this person being carried out in a stretcher in a bloody pulp. They're like, yeah, it would be hysterical. I'm like, oh, my God, guys, I'm not doing it. First of all, I'm not driving up the Bloomsburg to beat the shit out of a novice. You know, I would do that in the gym sometimes. You know, you get somebody in there that, you know, didn't have a whole lot of experience, and you'd let them drown themselves. I used to love doing that, like getting in the gym, finding a guy that was, like, starting out, was real cocky, kind of a big mouth, and just, like, doing, like, little things to him, and I would say make them drown themselves. Make them go out there, not throw a lot of punches at them, and just let them kind of wail away. They're not going to land anything. And then by, like, 30 seconds later, they're huffing and puffing, and you're laughing. I'm like you're coming at them, like, going to get you now. Now what are you going to do? You're tired. You ain't got nothing left. And then just fucking with them like that. That was more fun than, you know, beating up a guy that's never had the gloves on in their life.
I didn't like that when I went to a regular boxing gym. I never had that happen to me when I was in college, you know, but when I went to a regular boxing gym and had some experience, they used to always throw me in with the street fighters. And these kids would come at you, like, in a whirlwind.
Right. That's the kind I used to like. I was
literally 30 seconds, and you might get glanced with a punch or two, and you probably don't land much of your own, but you know from experience, this kid is going to die any second, right?
Yeah. So, exactly. That's what I used to find the most amusing at anything.
No, but the kid would get there. When I went to the gym and I would have to fight this guy, he would always get there, and I'd go to fucking lean in on him, and the coach would be like, stop! Because he wanted the kid to come back, you know? And he knew.
Right. Well, I'll tell you.
Fights with was like a 40-year-old guy who had been around, you know, and he knew what it was all about, but.
Two things that I'll never forget from South Philly, and I'm going back to my first year there. Now, the one I talked to you guys about a few weeks ago, when that me and that one kid were, like, you know, both training together, we were both kind of learning, and then he kept trying to pick up the pace on me, and the coach kept warning him, and then finally just gave me the look and said, go ahead. That's when I fired a left hook, and I had him, like, against the ropes, pouring blood out of his nose and his mouth, and he didn't come back for a month. Yeah, we already talked about that one, so we're going to ignore that one. But the other two I want to tell you about, we had this one kid, and I didn't really know him. He had been at the gym, and he was, you know, kind of training. And the one coach I had, he was really good. He wanted to really teach a technique. He was the one that was teaching me how to slip punches, and we did it real slow so you could really do it right instead of just getting in there and being like a meat market and just trying to brawl and doing all your technique wrong. You know, he really tried to teach it so then when you did pick up the pace, you did it right. So we had this one kid, and the kid was getting impatient, you know. Why are we working on the jabs, too? I want to go out there, I want to rough up and throw punches in the sand. He goes, no, you got to learn how to do it right. And the kid didn't want to listen. So the kid left for about a month, and he went somewhere else, and, you know, he learned a couple things quickly, but not correctly. So he came back to the gym, and he's, you know, he's a big badass. And he said, he came in and said, talking to the coach, yeah, I've been training somewhere else, and I'm ready to come back, and I want to see what you got, and this and that. And he goes, oh, and this kid was, I mean, tremendous shape. He looked like a little Evander Holyfield. You know, the rippling abs, you know, the muscles, just looked like he was in tremendous shape. So the coach went to him, this guy, Evan, who was the coach, great trainer, went to him and goes, you know what, I'll make a deal with you, man. I think the kid's name is Dez. He goes, I'll make a deal with you, Dez. He goes, I'm going to put you in one of my fighters. You got to last three rounds. If you can last three rounds, you get a month's worth of membership for free. You can't last, you know, the membership wasn't that much, it was like $10, $15. He goes, you can't last the three rounds, you pay your membership for a month, and you pay double the amount so a kid that can't afford a membership can get a month's worth of training. So Dez was talking shit. Now, Dez had the opportunity to really pick anybody. The trainer had picked so many guys. And he was going to let this kid, Dez, you know, pick out any of the guys that he wanted to prove himself three rounds with. The trainer kind of put me in that mix, but he was hoping that Dez didn't pick me. Not because he was worried that, you know, Dez would beat me up or anything like that, because I was still more experienced than him. His worry was I would hit Dez on the chin and knock him out, because that doesn't prove anything. Yeah, you didn't go to the three rounds, but yeah, you just said I couldn't go because I wasn't in shape. We were going to call me with a lucky shot. That's why I didn't go to the three rounds. He wanted somebody who was a little bit more experienced and would take him into the deeper waters and drown him. So this kid, Mike, well, not kid, he was obviously older than me. He was in his mid-30s. Mike Taylor got in there. Now, me and Mike actually had some problems, you know, later on ourselves. But Mike was a good guy. So he gets in there, and in tremendous shape, he starts really just boxing Dez's knees off, hitting the jabs, and then he starts hitting the body. Because that's what Kevin's master plan was. Hit this kid to the body to make him quit. Let him know that he ain't, you know, all that. And that when he quit, he quit when he was totally conscious because he had nothing left. And then he had to really realize that he was in the big boy's yard and he wasn't ready yet. And Dez quit around the... they kind of stopped it because he was taking a pretty good shellacking. So they stopped it around early to mid-third round. And he's bitching him around the butt. Give him credit. He didn't hold up through the end of the deal. Never really trained at the gym anymore, but he held up his own. Other one I'll never forget was we had a guy named Kenny. Kenny was a hell of a nice guy. He was around his late 30s, early 40s at the time. And Kenny was a guy that he never really had any fights, but he loved the sport of boxing, and he used to love to get in there and spar with, like, he would usually spar with Kevin, the trainer, or maybe Adrian, who was once in his early 40s, that was kind of like a guy that just loved boxing and was like a former pro fighter and was just trained to help out the younger guys like myself. Adrian was a great sparring partner because he never took liberties on you, even though he was more experienced. He would do things to make you work hard, and if you were making mistakes, he'd hit you. But he was trying to teach you, so you wouldn't make the mistakes. He wasn't trying to beat you up. So they were warning me that this guy, Kenny, they're like, yeah, we're going to put you in the ring with him tonight because we want you to learn a little bit more about survival in there. Because Kenny's the type of guy that, you know, he'll want to work with you. Yeah, okay, we'll work easy. Then he'll slide you with a few shots, and, you know, totally unnecessary, but he's going to want to do it anyway. And then before you get to retaliate, oh, man, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Okay, let's go back light. Then he'd slide you again. So I was in a bad mood that night, and the bell rang. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm taking it to this motherfucker. So the bell rings, and I come out like a house of fire, and I went right to the body. And I started backing him up with some hard shots. And he tried to counter, and I hit him with a counter left hook, and I buckled his knees. He went back in the corner, and I just stepped in. So I hit him in the body. Well, by the third round, he had nothing left. You know, I wobbled him in a few shots, and I gave him a body beating where he couldn't hold his arms up. His legs were gone. And I hit him another shot. Boom! And he went back against the ropes, and he's trying to spit his mouthpiece out. And he had his mouthpiece in his glove. And the trainer's laughing. Kevin's laughing. He's like, you know what? He's like, hey, Tom, finish him off. And he's like laughing. I'm like, you sure? He's like, yeah, finish him off. What the hell? Let's have some fun tonight. He goes, he always messes with some of the other guys. Now let's mess with him a little bit. Finish him off. And Kenny's looking at him. He's like, Kenny, get your mouthpiece back in your mouth. Yeah, but Kip, Kenny, get your mouthpiece back in your mouth. Yeah, but Kip, Kenny, get your mouthpiece back in your mouth. And Kenny put it back in there. And it sounded like Mortal Kombat. He's like, finish him. And that's when I went in there and I dug two body shots. I've never seen a guy pick his leg up so high he almost kneed himself in the face. And then he went down. And months later, we were doing a sparring session. And me and Kevin were sparring. We had it on video, and I still laugh to it. Because we're videoing, and Kenny's on the apron. And he's just trying. He's just messing with us. Cause we had no hard feelings. I like the guy. He's like, don't make me get in there. I'm still mad about my jaw. Don't make me get in there. And I'm like, come on in. Didn't say another word. But that's, you know, some of the good stuff that we had down there. You know, well, the guys really always liked each other down there. I mean, there was a few times there were some hard feelings. But the guys, for the most part, really liked each other. And, you know, there were some guys that had to be disciplined. And we used to have a group down there we used to call the Assassins Group. And it was, these are the guys that meted out the discipline when it was needed. Adrian, who was the guy, like I said, was like another trainer. He was like a great sparring partner. But when needed, he was an assassin. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy Mike, this guy I was telling you about, he got in there, and today he was an assassin. And when they anointed me the one time for beating up Kenny and beating up that other kid, Nate, they're like, you're a young assassin. I was like, oh, man, that was on Cloud 9. So, I mean, that's just some of the fun stuff. That's, I mean, that's why I like the sport so much. That's why I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, you know, that's why I want to get a tattoo of Among Us. You can have that look about you. Nobody would think you're tough, but, you know, you got so many years of boxing under your belt. You know, too much you can't do. That's right.
You know, I'm sitting here. I'm looking at all these stupid comments people are putting on my Facebook now that I told them I'm thinking about deleting my page. I got, for why? Yeah, why? Then I got this real dumb one telling me, it was a real dumb girl telling me I suck. You know what? You suck. Then someone told me to grow some gazungas. And then,
yeah.
It's great. I love playing the head games now. But you know, this is purposely for a few people out there that have consistently pissed me off. That's why I purposely took down all my, you know, my profile pics and all that. Because people are like emailing me and texting me, and I won't respond to them. Oh, you got it. And I'm like, and I'm just like totally MIA. And I kind of like that right now. I kind of needed it this week. But there's a lot of stress, a lot of pissed off.
Facebook universe.
What?
You're kind of picketing against the Facebook universe? Is that what's going
no,
on?
No, not at all. Absolutely not at all. Never did. Probably never will. You know, I just got a few people that I'm playing head games with. You know, they did a few things.
I saw that movie, The Social Network.
I didn't see it.
It's a very good movie, actually. I liked it because there was a lot of court shit in there. And the kid is very smart, you know. But he's like, he's got no concept of, like, I don't know, decency in some respects, or, you know, when to hold his tongue and not say things that are, like, not proper to say. It opens up with this great conversation between him and his girlfriend, and it's just like, you don't have to study, you go to BU. He's, like, totally serious about it. It just made me laugh. It's BU is Boston University. It's set in Boston, the beginning of it. You know, it's where he grew up, but I did see an interview with the guy on Oprah, and he said, the actual guy that, you know, it's supposedly based on, and he said that it's all fiction, but you never know. Some of it could be true, and they just embellished on it, you know. So it was interesting. It was a really good movie. I recommend it if you like courtroom dramas especially. But there's a couple boxing matches I wanted to mention going on over in France this Saturday. We have the mismatch of the week here at middleweight. It's the one fight on the card, and it's a six-round middleweight fight between Dennis Cioni, who is 33-5 with 14 knockouts, fighting Jindrich Cuban, who is 6-5 with 3 knockouts. Good luck, Mr. Jindrich.
Well,
and then,
what about the other fight card I'd actually like to talk about before we go any further? We got actually two fight cards. Very interesting fight we got going in Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, if I would have known about it sooner, I should have been going. Well, we got Juan Manuel Lopez, undefeated, fighting Rafael Marquez. Now, that's going to be a hell of a fight. Because you look at this, we got Lopez,
who has won two very impressive fights since his close call with my boy Rogers Matagua last year. He is 29-0, 26 knockouts, devastating fighter. Now he's fighting Rafael Marquez. Marquez, okay, maybe he's a little bit on the downside of his career, 35 years old, but the thing is, Marquez is still a hell of a fighter. You know, he lost those two real tough fights in 07 and 08 to Israel Vasquez. When he came back, he knocked Vasquez out pretty impressively in this past May, third-round stoppage. You know, and he's Juan Manuel Lopez, Juan Manuel Marquez was more of a boxer.
Hey, what about Juan Manuel straight, huh?
Yeah, I know. I got to get my Juan Manuel straight. Rafael Marquez was more of a punter. Rafael's 39-5 with 35 KOs. You know, Juan Manuel Lopez, 29-0, 26 knockout. So very good chance you're going to be seeing somebody not making the whole 12 rounds. And then also on the card, we got a very interesting fight. We got Alan Green. This is a super middleweight, which I guess is part of the super middleweight tournament here because, I mean, there's been so much going on with that, you know, tournament. Alan Green coming off that, very lopsided loss to Andre Ward is fighting Glenn Johnson, who is trying to get himself in this tournament. Now, Glenn, who's been fighting the last so many years.
By the way, Tony. There's an outside chance we are going to interview Glenn Johnson very soon.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds great to me. I'd love to talk to him. Alan Green was 29-2 with 20 knockouts. Glenn Johnson, who's been fighting at 175, is now coming down to 168, which is kind of interesting. I don't know because in Johnson's last fight, he fought very, very nip and tuck with Tavares Clown, who was reigning title holder at 175, undefeated. And Johnson gave him a hell of a hard time. But Johnson looked a little bit soft in that fight. Now, how is he going to be affected at 41 years old, getting down to 168? That's going to be the big story here. I mean, if Johnson's in tip-top shape and he doesn't age overnight, I can see him definitely beating Alan Green. Alan Green is, the younger fighter. He's, the fresher fighter. But I just see Johnson as being, the better fighter. And in a nip-tuck fight, I see Johnson's experience, his better chin, and his superior physicality being the difference there in maybe a late-round stoppage over Green.
Right. Well, we'll see. I'd love to see Glenn Johnson slug it out and keep...
And then your boy... is fighting down in Fairfax, Virginia. We got a card here that, I don't know how impressive this is, but we got Jimmy Lang, who's the first year of the contender.
It's Jimmy Lang's promotion, so he's going to fight a freaking punching bag.
He's not fighting a punching bag. He's fighting a guy on, Jimmy Lang is 33-4 with 23 knockouts. The guy he's fighting, which is kind of interesting, is by the name of Joe Wyatt. I don't know much about him, but Joe Wyatt is 23-1 with 15 knockouts, but his last fight was his first loss, which was a seventh-round TKO. So, I mean,
was he
stepped up, or was he as good as advertised? And then also, the one that really caught me as interesting on the undercard is we have William Joppy, who I thought retired, but apparently did not. He took, pretty good pummelings in his last two fights. He is, 39-6 with 30 knockouts. He's going to be fighting a guy by the name of Corey Cummings, who I don't know much about, 17-4 with 13 knockouts. And then the one that really caught my eye, and maybe it's kind of like a sad state on, sometimes how fighters, really have slipped over the years, but it was Jonathan Reed. And I like Jonathan Reed. I was, talking to him a few years ago. He was really trying to turn his career around after that first year of the contender. Because when Jonathan Reed came on the contender, he was actually just like as they ranked all the guys at the start, and Peter Manfredo was number one. Jonathan Reed was number two. You know, he had, was, I forget what his record was at the time, but it was whatever in one, and his only loss was a stoppage loss to William Joppy in a title fight. So this is a guy that had fought for a world title, you know, was now on the show, the contender. And he lost on there, I forget who he eventually lost to. It might have been one of the kids that made the semifinal, Jesse Brinkley. I think Brinkley was the one that had beaten him. And then Reed, I met him a couple years later. We were talking. He fought down in the arena down in Philadelphia against a local kid who a lot of my friends were friends with, DeFear, No Fear Smith. And DeFear had about a 500 record, beat Jonathan Reed. And then from there on, I mean, Reed just really, I mean, went downhill, which is a shame. He was he seemed like a really nice guy, and just his career just spiraled. Now he's fighting a guy by the name of Mike McPhail, who I've seen play on several occasions, and he's a guy that, you know, the guy he just, he, let's see, how to say it a nice way, he's an opponent. He's a guy, you know, you fight down there, you know, you're expected to beat. Now,
is Mike McPass fighting on that card too, or just Mike McPhail?
Yeah, when Jonathan Reed got on the contender back about 5 years ago, he had one loss, and that was until he lost to Jesse Brinkley.
Ooh.
Since that time, he's only had one win. He started off; he was like 33-1. Now he's 34-13. Lost that fight to Brinkley. Then he lost two straight fights. He had a win, had a couple losses, and he had that loss to DeFear Smith. And from there, he's lost all of his fights, even a loss to Jimmy Lang.
Jimmy Lang.
He's 38 years old. He's a guy. He seems like such a nice guy, such a good family man, that you kind of hope that he, you know, sees the writing on the wall, decides, you know, maybe it's time to hang him up. And now, if he loses this fight, he definitely needs to hang him up. Mike McPhail is, I mean, and once again, good kid. You know, I mean, maybe, I've only seen him fight once or twice. He's lost, I mean, almost all of his recent fights. He had a few draws in there. He's 20-40. 12 of those 40 losses have been by stoppage. So he's definitely a guy that might be best off, you know, hanging the gloves up. You hate to say that because you want to give the guy a chance, you know, to, you know.
Well, there are also a couple of
career, but I mean, it's, you know, you don't want the guy taking a lot of beatings either.
Right. There's also a couple of good female fights going on overseas. Obviously, I don't see too many in the United States, but we have a main event going on in France again. Television, it's going to be on EU Eurosport. You can find that on the web. Miriam Lamar, 17-3 with 9 knockouts, fighting for the World Boxing Federation female light welterweight title, fighting Lucia Morelli, who's 14-1 with 7 knockouts. And very rare you see double-digit wins and single-digit losses in these female fights, unfortunately, because you have girls that, you know, it's a very small talent pool that they're picking from. And just case in point, the co-main event is Capucine Prochet. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. 7-0 with 4 knockouts, fighting Nasira Kabeli, 2-1, and that's for the vacant France female featherweight title. Just kind of interesting. But also on that card, I don't know if you ever heard of this guy, but it kind of reminds me of the Princess Bride here. Not the first guy I'm going to mention, but the second guy. They had a super bantamweight fight between Jeremy Parody, 28-1 with 1 draw, 8 knockouts, fighting Feliciano Dario Azuaga Ledesma, who is 79-19-2 with 64 knockouts. That's super bantamweight, fighting a 6-rounder here in France. Have you ever heard of that guy?
Congratulations. You've got a $1,000.
Never heard of
gift card.
Inigo Montoya?
I've heard of Inigo Montoya.
Oh.
He's killed his father. They needed to prepare to die.
My father was Feliciano, Dario, Azuaga, Ledesma. Let's see how many people that are famous that he fought. I don't know. I don't see anybody. Yeah. Probably a good reason why you don't know. Here's one win. The guy was 1-19. There's another win. The guy was 3-13. The other one, guy was 1-22. These are recent ones, though. He fought a guy who was 53-9-2 back in 2003. Hugo Rafael Soto lost that fight, the 10th, at TKO. That's quite a record here. It was good back in the day. Oh, that's an interesting record, though. We also have a fight going on Saturday in Limerick, Ireland, between Paul Hyland, 18-1, and Willie Casey, 10-0, for the EBU Super Bantamweight title. It's a 12-rounder. Luis Garcia and Byron Mitchell are also fighting on that card. Garcia's 10-0 with 8 knockouts. Mitchell's 28-6 with 21 knockouts. And then speaking of female fights, we have a hell of a female fight here. One of the best matchups I have seen in the female ranks in forever. Especially because, I've interviewed one of these ladies. There's Ana Maria Torres at Super Flyweight, and this is in Mexico. Go figure. Not going to be on TV, I don't think. I don't see a TV listing. But this is Saturday. This Saturday. 10-rounder. Ana Maria Torres, 22-3 with 2 draws, 13 knockouts, fighting Holly Hot Stuff Dunaway. It's 23-8 with 10 knockouts, 1 draw. And a super flyweight fight. It's going to be interesting. Holly's is kind of a girl that was working out at the gym. She was, I think, dating a personal trainer or knew a personal trainer, and he ended up bringing her into boxing. And now she's famous, you know. She's been around the world and fought in a lot of fights. I interviewed her like back in 2006 or something. Great interview. You still with us, Tony?
I'm still with you, man.
All right, just checking. But this isn't even the main event. The main event is for the WBC light flyweight title for the men. Oscar Nino Romero, 30-3 with 12 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Gilberto Kebbas, who's 33-20 with 21 knockouts. And then there's also another female fight, very interesting matchup, between super bantamweights Jackie Nava, 22-3 with 2 draws, and Jennifer Salinas, who's 11-2 with 4 knockouts. And interim WBC female super bantamweight titles on the line there. All in Yucatan, Mexico. So if you happen to find a tunnel from San Diego to Mexico, you want to go to that, get some tickets, I'll get you in. Let's see what else we got. Saturday. A lot of fights going on over in the UK. Patrick Mendy. What? That's his record. Was better than that. Does he have a son? You brought up Juan Manuel. Fight there.
He's a good
fight. That's going to be on Showtime on Saturday. Zab Judah. You talked about that one, right?
Yes, I did. That's the NHL.
Did you know Gary Bergeron is on that card?
Oh, is he? Nice.
I never heard of Gary Bergeron, but he's got a good record, 12-6 with 7 knockouts. See where he's from. Fighting a guy who's 9-0, and the guy's name is Saddam. Come on. Saddam Ali, 9-0 with 5 knockouts. I don't know if Gary's going to come to the occasion and slay Saddam. We'll find out. That's kind of funny. He's from, Southern Pride is his nickname. So, oh, here it is. Chalmette, Louisiana. Yeah, I've heard it. I've actually heard there's a lot of Bergerons in Louisiana. I haven't met one of them yet, but apparently there are. His last loss, Gary's, was to Chad Bennett, who was 24-4-3. So it's quite the step up from his previous fight, which was a guy who was 9-24.
Hey, Rick, can I give a message out real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Remember when you used to have webcam, and I never did, so people on the show could literally see your face or the back of your head while you were holding your cat,
yeah,
and you're using your Red Sox number one finger as a mouse pad. And I never had a webcam for part of the reasons like this. You know, when people give me a lot of shit, and here's a message I want to give to somebody very special right now. Just imagine me sticking out my tongue, giving my finger. And no, I'm not going to wake up. Thank you.
Well, now that you have that off your chest, I do want to talk about a couple of things going on in the UFC. I don't know if we really talked about this last week. It just happened.
I don't remember.
The UFC,
remember last week? I was up like an hour.
Oh, yeah. The WEC and the UFC have merged. So we have a situation now where they're basically going to fold all these lightweight divisions into the UFC. There's a featherweight, bantamweight, and I think a lightweight division in the WEC. So you already have a lightweight division in the UFC. So they're going to create this big round table tournament sort of deal where they're going to mingle these two together next year. The first fight of the year is actually New Year's Day on 2011. So Jose Aldo, who is the guy that I like to say is responsible for me never fighting in MMA, because he took out Cub Swanson in 18 seconds back on a WEC card years ago.
Was that like a flying knee or something?
It was a flying knee at first. He just raged across from his corner and just leaped in the air, kneed him in the face. Cub Swanson went face down on the mat. And Jose Aldo hit him with like four or five more shots to the face, just looping punches from the standing position when the guy was face down, knocked out already. And the ref could barely get between them. like at least five shots, I think. Oh, it was just brutal. It was so fast. 18 seconds. And I said, if this guy's like that in the sport, that good at it, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I want to risk going into this and trying this out. You know? And it was interesting because I don't have the article right in front of me, I don't think, but there was a huge hubbub about some folks up in Canada trying to ban MMA because of the medical issues, or at least make consistent regulations across the board all over Canada.
What's Canada's most popular sport?
Hockey.
Yeah, in fact, I'm watching the Flyers right now. They're winning 4-1. Way to go, Philadelphia. But second of all, ever watch hockey? You ever see the guy smile? Yeah, talk to me about brutal and needing medical attention, and you can shut the hell up. I mean, I've seen guys actually leave, get their entire face stitched up, sewn back on their skull, and then come back and play some more. Yeah, don't talk to me about brutal when you're taking a frozen piece of rubber at 100 miles an hour right in the kisser. I don't want to hear brutal and medical issues. So Canada, shut the hell up.
All right, well. Now you make me not even want to read the article.
I'll read the article. I mean, hey, I mean, I promote literacy. I mean, please, but feel free to go ahead and read it. Then tell them at the end of it to shut the hell up.
Well, actually, it's kind of weird. It's from a website called Toronto Insurance. And there's a big section of it where they talk about how nobody will insure them.
I don't like the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't like the Toronto Blue Jays. And if I lost basketball, I wouldn't like the Toronto Raptors either.
All right, well, here's the thing. Lately, medical professionals gathered in Niagara Falls to express their opinions on MMA at this year's Canadian Medical Association's general annual meeting. Most of the professionals expressed their belief that the sport should be outlawed. They simply argue that MMA is a dangerous sport with too large a probability of injuries, much more significant than it is in other sports like boxing. Now, get this. Dr. Ian Gillespie, the president of British Columbia Medical Association, explains that MMA fighting, like boxing, is distinct from many other sports and that the basic intent of the fighter is to cause harm in order to incapacitate his or her opponent. He adds that the various techniques aren't limited to punching, and there may be the presence of fewer safety rules. And the British Medical Association also expressed their worries about mixed martial arts in January 2009 and are actively campaigning to ban MMA in Britain. They, too, argue that the sport tends to get very violent and brutal. And there's a whole lot of other shit there, but basically, I don't know if this is good or bad or what they have the power to do or not do. But the best article here that I've seen in recent days, I almost want to read the whole thing word for word, is over on USAtoday.com. Strikeforce's Scott Coker called himself the Bobber Rum of MMA and UFC President Dana White, Don King. And this is his exact quote. Scott Coker is kind of a short, fat guy himself. And the article kind of goes into depth about how the UFC and Strikeforce have different mentalities. The Strikeforce seems to be most focused on the fighter, according to this piece anyway, you know, whereas the UFC is the image and the expansion in the business. Totally, you know, and the fighter's last. So this is kind of interesting. So Scott Coker says, Dana is kind of like the Don King. He's out there and he's out promoting his brand as well as the company brand and the fighter brand. I'm more of a very direct businessman. The guy I really liked wasn't Don King. To me, it's like okay being the Bobber Rum. In a lot of Bob's early fights, you didn't even know who promoted the fights. The fights were amazing. They were great, and they were focused on the athlete. That's been my philosophy, too. So it's kind of interesting. And one of the most interesting parts of this article, I did not know this, but few of the UFC fighters have stayed on top for long. Only three men, Tito Ortiz, Matt Hughes, and Anderson Silva, have had more than four successful UFC title defenses. In the heavyweight division, no one has done it more than twice. Well, that's interesting. I did not know that. Fighters can come and go, but promoters hang around for decades. And it says UFC kept White largely in the background during his early years running the company. He occasionally found the spotlight in unexpected places such as Pride Final Conflict 2003 when he joined the English broadcast team to help fuel a Pride versus UFC storyline. But he mostly let his fighters do the talking. And that all changed with The Ultimate Fighter. That's what created White, his image, and the draw for the UFC, really. It's been credited for years as the be-all, end-all motivator for why fans started flocking to the UFC, because they saw it on TV, and it was... I don't know whether The Contender was around at the same time or they came around before, but The Contender, I mean, I didn't even want to watch it. I watched one episode, and I was like, are you kidding me? You know, they edit the fights into these clips, and, you know...
Don't piss me off, that's a contender. I was at my last job at the time. Obviously, there were a lot more people working there than at my current job that I would see on a daily basis. So everybody can, like, it was, hey, for, at least for the first so many weeks, it was like the hottest show on TV. Sly Stallone, Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, the contender, done by Mark, whatever his name was, as the producer. You know, this is going to be great. So, you know, of course, me being a boxing fan, I had to watch it, you know, knowing some of the guys like Joey Gilbert personally, and then seeing some of the other guys that had fallen there, like seeing guys like Peter Manfredo, who I'd watched before, Anthony Bonsante, all guys like that. The kid from Philadelphia that ended up, you know, committing suicide, and Nigel Morgan, I think his name was, or Turpin, not Nigel Turpin. But, of course, so I'm watching it, and then people would come to me, like, the next day, and they're asking me questions. And they were, like, asinine questions. There was a girl I was dating at the time, and her and I was, like, a constant argument, you know. So, like, she came up to me, like, one day, and she sent me, like, a message, like, when you get a chance, I really want to talk to you about last night's show. I'm like, she just wants to annoy me. She just wants to talk to me, and she's going to get it off, like, she wants to make it like it's going to be the show, and that's going to be her hook to get a hold of me, to talk to me, and then annoy me. So I wouldn't talk to her. Well, then she caught me later. I'm like, great. I wanted to ask you questions about last night's show. What were they putting on the guys' faces, and why were they putting it on there? I'm like, Jesus Christ. Are you that much of a sped? I'm like, it's Vaseline. Why do you put Vaseline on your face? And I'm like, do I have to get into a whole discussion on you with the, you know, the frictional reasons and the viscosity of putting Vaseline on your face to soften the skin and slick the blows off. I'm like, they just put it on there because they do. That was my answer.
I just actually explained the other night to somebody that was watching the White Collar Brawler here with the house and me that even when you wear headgear, you should put Vaseline on your face. You know,
absolutely.
Why would you do that?
When I spar, when we would spar down in Philadelphia, we'd actually put the Vaseline on the gloves because when you're in a sparring session, you're not trying to cut anybody or you're not, you know, trying to do any, you know, damage, you know, to the person's face. You're in a sparring session.
Unless you're an asshole.
Well, unless you're an asshole, which I definitely was. You know, you wanted to, you know, keep, you know, the guy you're sparring with safe. You wanted to keep yourself safe because you're getting ready for, you know, a bout coming up. We put Vaseline on the gloves, you know, just, you know, so you didn't get those rough edges, you know, damaging the skin and, you know, causing any more damage, you know, when you're getting ready for a fight. But people come up to me like, Joe, did you watch The Contender last night? I'm like, yeah. Okay, and then they start asking me all these questions. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Well, what pissed me off is, like, you know, it made it too much like a movie. You know, you're watching a fight between them. I'm just going to give an example. The first fight on there, Peter Manfredi and Alfonso Gomez. That fight could have been horrible. You don't know because, you know, it was so edited where it was like a solid punch landed. You're showing the crowd going, ooh, and then they're showing the punch land like three times in slow motion. Well, I'm like, and then you're getting to see, like, out of a 3-minute round, you're seeing like maybe 15 seconds of action. And I'm like, well, you really can't. And people are like, well, who, Tony, who do you think won that fight? I'm like, I have no idea. What do you mean you don't know? Didn't you watch it? I'm like, yeah, I watched it. I didn't get to watch the whole fight in normal motion. You know, I'd want to watch the whole round, and I'd want to see it in real time, so then I could say, okay, this guy did this, or this guy was making this other guy miss. I don't want to see, you know, with, you know, people slamming like a book on a table to make a punch sound louder than it was. I'm like, that's not realistic. And they said it was like too much like a movie to me. It was like, you know, like a bad Rocky movie. Some fights are going to be terrible. I remember a Chris Bird fight from back in the day. It was a third round knockout. And the only person that was knocked out was me on the couch from falling asleep in the third round because the fight was so atrocious. But the referee actually warned both fighters for lack of action. That's how bad it was. And a fight like that, you can't make look good. Some fights are not going to be good. So people watch this Contender show, and they're like, hey, the one thing I will give to the Ultimate Fighter and all that, when they show the fights, they show the fights. You know, if a fight's a stinker, you're going to see a stinker. You're not going to see a Hollywood-produced affair. You're not going to see a fight where it looks so much more dramatic, and then in reactuality, it really sucked. You know, and that's what I think turned a lot of people off when they logged in for the final, which was Manfredo versus Mora. The fight was decent. It wasn't great. It was decent. And then you had Sugar Ray Leonard, for as great a fighter as he was never a good color commentator, even on his time on HBO. And Sly Stallone. I love Sly Stallone. But he's a movie fighter. He's not a real fighter. The fight's 10 seconds old. Each guy threw about three punches. They're like, oh, my God, this is the greatest fight ever. These guys are warring. They're killing each other. Well, no, they're not. And this fight is actually mediocre at best. I can't believe the intensity of this fight. I can. You know, it's not that impressive. So, I mean, so people are watching it, and they're getting used to this Hollywood drama of these fights they've been watching, and then they're getting a mediocre fight with horrible commentary. Didn't really help it out too much, and that's why I think the show failed.
Sucked, as I would say. No, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, the editing snippets, they didn't show the entire fight, and they did dramatize it quite a bit by, like, showing the reactions of the crowd and interspliced between shots of, you know, the actual action of the fights that, you know, even edited weren't that great. I'd rather see the whole fight. Like they do, they would do one fight on the Ultimate Fighter at the end of the show, usually. Or in the case now of the first few episodes, they have, you know, these guys fight to get into the house in the first place. So you have, you know, 7 or 8 highlight reels in one show sometimes. So, but it's the full fight usually. They don't show highlights unless it's, you know, they get into the 10th fight. And they're just looking to fill time. So it's just it's a different manner of doing things, and obviously the Ultimate Fighter had a little bit more of the real world type reality set up where they're all living in one house and they have to deal with each other's shit all the time. And I didn't watch it this week, you know, but it's obviously going to get interesting because they're going to have bantamweight and flyweight. No, bantamweight and what was the other one? Featherweight. Ultimate Fighters now. They're going to have those two seasons coming up, so you're going to see these lighter guys from the WEC doing the same thing. And I think it's a good move with the whole merger, but we'll see. Anyway, there are a few different fights going on across the world, really, but I'm just going to go run through the ones in the United States. Kind of wish I was still in Abington, Mass., because I could go to Randolph, which is the next town over, for Carnage on tomorrow night. That's at the Lombardo's Function Facility. And we get RFC 22 Redemption in Tampa, Florida, also tomorrow. Let's see, what else we got? A whole lot of shit in Brazil, Poland. Here we go. Island Pride X1 in the Blaisdell Arena, Honolulu, Hawaii. That's on the 6th, which is Saturday. We got Saunders versus Harshbarger in Kissimmee, Florida at the WEF show. King of the Cage Underground 64 at Keewaydin Casino in St. Marie, Michigan. So St. Marie. Fight Night 5, Southern Thunder, Hammerhead MMA, that's going on in New Zealand. Let's see, Niagara Falls, New York, United States, Mayhem in the Mist at the Seneca Niagara Casino and Hotel. And then we have in Israel, we have a fight on the 9th of November, which will be Tuesday night, next Tuesday night, at the Nokia Arena in Tel Aviv, Israel. Israel Fight Club, Genesis. And I think this is actually one of the cards that there was a couple guys mentioned that our last guest might be fighting next, Shoni Carter. And it was one of the names. He's supposed to be on this card. And a couple of other UFC veterans are going to be on this card. I think we put a blog out. I know we put a blog out about it, too. Also, on the 11th, next Thursday, Faber versus Mizugaki in the WEC 52. This could be one of their, well, this is going to be one of their last WEC officially labeled cards. And of course, it's in Las Vegas. And we got, that's pretty much it for the week. So I want to go to Brazil. But also, we had Election Day the other day, of course. I don't know if you're a big politician there, Tony. Did you vote? Did you vote?
I didn't vote.
I didn't vote this.
And you did or you didn't?
Didn't, no. I just got
my
so I could have. But I didn't. I don't know.
Well, I did. I always vote. And I want to give everybody the fair enough warning. 2 years from now, November of 2012, a month before the world ends anyway. It doesn't matter. I want you all to get out to the polls, and I want you to make sure you vote for me, because I think I'm going to be announcing my candidacy for president of the United States. And I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, I know what the hell is going on in this country. I don't like to listen to any bullshit, politically correct crap. That's not me. You know, here's what this country needs. Illegal aliens, get them the fuck out. They're killing the economy. They're taking free health care, free this, free that. They're not paying taxes. Screwing us all. You know, welfare, hey, you know what? I'm all for helping people that are down on their luck or whatever. But if you keep popping out kids are going to be taken away and put up for adoption for a family that, you know, can afford them but can't have any of their own. Okay? That's another thing. You know, these people, you know, they basically are just trying to pop out the kids to get more welfare money, which they're not using on the kids. They're using for drugs, alcohol, and God knows what else. Third of all, life in prison? No. Now we got all these forensic things, you know. Very rarely now you get people that are imprisoned for the wrong reasons, okay? You got all these forensic tests, all these CSI, all that crap they do. You get caught murdering somebody, first-degree murder. Basically, here's how you do it. The jury comes out, we find so-and-so guilty. The judge says, okay, I sentence you to death, you take him outside, you hang him. Boom, just like you used to do in the Old West. That's how you got to get it done. Now you're not, you know, using taxpayer money to feed these people free hops in a cot all the time in these overcrowded prisons. You know, you got to get
a famous murderer, you know, somebody takes a cell phone camera picture or a video like they did with Saddam, and it's, you know, it's like a future warning or a further warning to all those guys who would murder out there. Hey, you're going to get hung.
We're too soft on the criminals anymore, and we got to get a little bit tougher. That's why you need me out there. You know, you got to get the economy straightened out, so, you know, you can't be shipping jobs overseas anymore. Bullshit. You keep the jobs in America. Because here's the problem. You're exporting your jobs to, like, China and India because they pay their workers, like, 11 cents an hour. To get cheap labor. Yeah, that's all great and everything. But what are they important here? They're citizens. So we're getting their citizens coming here. Our jobs are going there. A little bit of an imbalance. We can't have that anymore. No. Jobs got to stay in America. You know, hey, and I'm all for you. People come into the land of opportunity. I have no problems with that. But here's what you got to do. You got to have the people come in legally. You come in legally, you fill out a visa or a green card or whatever that shit is you got to fill out. You come in the country legally, you apply for citizenship, you learn the language. Fine, you can come here, you can set up a business. We'll give you a 2-year tax break until you get yourself on your feet. Then guess what? You're going to pay taxes. You're going to pay taxes in your business. You ship the money back to your, you know, family of 85 over back wherever you came from, then you got a problem. Then you're going to pay double the taxes. You know, you're going to pay, like, export fees or whatever it is. I don't care.
Well, then who are we going to pay 18 cents an hour to do our gardening?
You know what? Me. I don't care. Actually, me, not me. I'll be your president. But I had a couple friends of mine that even have their own business going, and, you know, you got to get these people a little bit more self-sufficient, you know. They want
to
work.
Going back to the hanging thing, actually, I'm gonna give you some knowledge.
You know what? Richie, you gave me a great idea.
Actually, I think it was in Utah. I'm not sure, but there was an actual case where a guy had murdered these kids by strangling or with a rope or something. So he specifically requested that his death sentence be carried out by hanging. And there, so
that's
there
great.
Still hanging. I think it was back in the 90s because I did a report in high school about vigilante justice and the death penalty and all this
stuff. I think there was one the other year where the guy chose the firing squad, and I think that's awesome.
There are states that still have firing squad listed as their method of execution.
Lethal injection causes excruciating pain. What, for the 3 seconds you're still alive? Tough.
Yeah.
You're causing a lot of families excruciating pain by murdering one of theirs. So you know what? I have no problem with you suffering for 3 seconds until you croak. Not a problem. Now, okay, Richard, yes, who's going to do your gardening for 18 cents an hour? Hey, here's a great idea. The people that are in prison. The prisoners, you know what? All they get to do is they go to prison, they sit there. You know, maybe they'll break a few rocks here and there, or maybe they'll pick up some garbage here and there. Most of the time, they just, you know, spend 3 hots in a cot. They get to lift weights, they get to play basketball, they get a lot of recreation time. Shit, they get better than I do. I mean, I got to go to work every day and bust my ass to pay for them. You know, bullshit. You want it? You want to be put? You want to break the law? You know what? Get on the chain gang. You know, go out and do Rich's garden. Go out, you know, and you know, do some asphalt, some hard ass shit, and get 18 cents an hour. So you can buy, you know, your cigarettes. You know, hey, what, 18 cents an hour, $5 a pack of cigarettes. Yeah, after about 30 or 40 hours, you might be able to buy a pack. Hey, great. Hey, don't break the law. That's my moral of the story. But you have too many people, and they want to give excuses. Oh, here's why I'm a criminal. Here's why I murdered this person. Here's why I shot a cop. Here's why I do drugs. Because I had a bad upbringing. I don't want to hear it. You know? Granted, my family took a lot of care of me, and they gave me a decent upbringing, but I still have a lot of time.
Do you ever watch Saturday Night Live, Tony?
What?
Do you ever watch Saturday Night Live these days?
No, not anymore. Not since Eddie Murphy was off.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, well, Eddie Murphy was the man. I haven't watched it in, like, 20-some years.
Yeah, I haven't really watched it, you know, exclusively. Every now and then I catch it. And they had this episode on a few weeks ago with Amy Poehler was back on there. And they had this guy that came in. It's supposed to be a pregnancy show, right? So they bring this producer in. He's, like, balding and fat. And he's taking place of the lady that usually runs the show. So, of course, you know, they're asking him all these feminine questions. And he's like, what do you want my advice for? You know, he's just laid back and, you know, just shooting the shit and telling him exactly what he thinks instead of, you know, being sensitive. So he gets this one question from this lady, and she's like, well, I have a lot of flatulence going on with my pregnancy. And he's like, what? What'd you say? You were in flash dance? And then she says, no, I have gas. And he's like, oh, I don't even want to hear that. He's like, yeah, here's what you do. You go and you rope off a section of your house and you stay there. it was kind of funny the way they set it up. But I haven't laughed at a sketch so hard in years. I mean, it was very well put together. You know, it started off kind of slow, but when that section came up, I was like, oh, man. But sometimes that's just what people do. You know, you just got to say it raw. Just tell the truth. The way it's going to be. You know, but this election, it's had a lot of effect on the sports, the combat sports that we talk about every week here. And, of course, the biggest effect would be the re-election of Harry Reid in Nevada, who is very cozy with the Fertitta brothers. His son, Key Reid, is actually on the board of directors for a bank out in Las Vegas called Meadows Bank, which Andre Agassi is also on the board of. And the same guy who runs Fertitta Enterprises, which now owns Zions, is the CPA for the company. You know, he's like a chief financial officer, actually, CFO. And just all kinds of interesting connections between Reid and some of the UFC fighters were stumping for him. And I put a huge article out on ZionsSucks.com the other day about it. And if you do a search for Station Casinos, I think it still comes up. But I also had an issue the other day. I think it's gone now. I don't know if you had any issues with trying to access the website, but we had a little malware problem. Google was listing us as having malware. Some of our dead pages still had that old code on it that did it to us before. So we fixed that. That won't be an issue, but ZionsSucks.com is also affected, so that's fixed now. But if you go there, there's an article called Following the Money. And recently I just did some digging in some of the financial areas and looked at some of the businesses that the Fertittas own. And lo and behold, here's some things I never knew. The Fertittas have an ownership interest in the Monte Carlo as well as Station Casinos. Found that out. There's a whole bunch of different companies that are either under the Fertitta name or can be connected to their general manager of Fertitta Enterprises. So the more I dug, you know, the more companies I found. And, you know, you dig into those companies, they have subsidiaries. And, you know, this is why politics is so screwed up. Because these people are so entrenched, they pay so many tax dollars, they have so many friends in the political world. They even tried to influence the New York elections because they want MMA to be regulated and approved in New York State and New York City. So, unfortunately, the guy that was the biggest rival of that happening was reelected. But they got a governor who's very friendly with them, apparently. So, and they gave him $75,000, the UFC did. And he got elected. So, we'll see if payback happens there. But just very interesting across the board, Nevada especially. Ross Miller, the Secretary of State in Nevada, who does all the business transactions and setups for businesses, is a mixed martial artist. He practices Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, so just kind of interesting. He's friends with Dana White and all that. So Nevada is just a political mess. So it's a nightmare, I think. And the Fertitta's running things, it's bad news, I think, in any area. Another thing I ran across at SureDog, actually, there was an article about Heath Herring. He's had to resort to acting, can you believe it? Because the UFC won't give him a fight. You know, it's been since 2008 he's had a fight. He wants a fight. He's had to move to California, and he's been in 8 movies since he was last fighting in the UFC at a high level. But they keep his contracts, and they won't let him fight anywhere else. They have a chance to match it. And they just keep him under contract and leave him languishing. They won't give him a fight. Kind of interesting. I never heard of a situation like that before, but he's in it. And those are the type of people that run that company, I think, unfortunately. And not too many people know about it. But if you go to ZionSucks.com, you can check it out. The whole story's there. There's going to be some interesting developments in that whole case coming up soon. Probably going to wrap a lot of stuff up and figure some things out. There's also rumors of a new president of Zions. Just figured that out today. I found that out. And it's a guy that who's very well known for acquiring properties and companies and just selling them as soon as possible. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But that's what I'm hearing. I don't know what else you got, but we've gone through all the fights. I touched on a lot of stuff I need.
Using the MMA term, I'm pretty much tapped out tonight. I'm glad, I ended up doing the show tonight. I mean, I was really sick the last few days. When you see the pictures of my Halloween costume running around at the end of October after a hectic week that I had anyway, wearing just a basketball jersey, shorts, and a grass hula skirt. Not the brightest idea in the world. I mean, I was really sick. On Monday, I had to bring the whole food down. Went to work because it was month end closed to the point where the bosses were like, "What the hell are you doing here? Get out of here." I'm like, "No, as soon as I finish month end, I'll go home." I finished month end at 5:05. So I went on Tuesday, and then the boss told me my friend, he's like, "How you feeling?" I'm like, "To be honest, like shit." He's like, "Why are you down?" I'm like, "I finished a few things, man." He goes, "When you're done, get the hell out." I went home, slept for like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, woke up, took some medicine, went to sleep for 9.5 straight hours. Yesterday, I mean, I didn't go in, rested all day, slept for another 9.5 hours last night. And then today, I was at work, and I'd have periods where I felt great, periods where I didn't feel so good. And tonight, I came home, went out, had to pick up a few things, and I was coming home at 7:30. I'm like, man, I hope my voice stays strong enough tonight, and I hope I feel just good enough on this, to be on the show and at least make a good account of myself, to be able to talk whether we had an interview or not. Be able to, go back and forth. I said, if we didn't have an interview, it's basically you and I carrying the show. And, I want to give a good enough account of myself that, if it's just the two of us, where I could hold my own. And if we did have an interview, that I could at least participate a little bit, whether it's a boxing guy or an MMA guy, that I could, ask some questions and, be a good co-host. But, when we got on there, I really got the tempo going, and I'm probably going to pass out now. Mm-hmm. But my voice feels strong. I feel a lot better. I do want to make this announcement for anybody that's still listening. This is very exciting, very exciting, Rich. Too bad you live up in Boston. Saturday, December the 18th, in Norristown, Pennsylvania, the return of the one and only Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Santa Claus, the same Santa Claus, not the guy from the North Pole that, brings presents and shit. This is the real Santa Claus. The Santa Claus on the street corner of DeKalb Pike and whatever the cross street was last year, threatened to beat up a passing motorist that flipped him the bird. The same mm-hmm. Santa Claus that owned the devastating left hook. Now, the girl that played the part of Mrs. Claus last year has been begging for the job back because I told her I fired her because she didn't come to a haunted house with me. And she said, "Yeah, but you can't replace me." I said, "Yeah." Says who? Oh, please. I said, "I got girlfriend on applications for the job. That's a big position to be Mrs. C." And you can't replace me. I'm like, "Sure I can. Do whatever I want. I'll talk to the owner of the lot." I said, "Talk to him." I said, "I'm the owner of the fantasy." And I said, "If I don't use Mrs. Claus, I'll find another Mrs. Claus." But I'm, being a dick. I'm good at that. But anybody on Saturday, December 18th, that wants to come to Norristown and see me, I'll probably be drinking a beer and spreading holiday cheer.
Well, you do that. And
I will. I'm good at that.
I'll try to show up next year when I have some money.
Yeah.
But right now, I've got too much shit going on. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get out of here. But I still got to do a Ring Girl contest voting page, by the way. It's going to happen one way or another over the weekend or between now and then. It's going to get done because I got a lot of other stuff done. Unfortunately, I found out some bad news about Reggie Johnson. He got put away for 12 years.
How?
12 years. And but I did talk to his lawyer today, and he has a chance to get parole in 4 years' time. So basically, he's got another 2 years. He's been over 2 years, so he's got about a year and a quarter left for his first shot at parole. But 12 years, I mean, apparently there was a lot of evidence I didn't even realize was out there. But all around, I think from the things that he was telling me and writing to me, he had a rough situation going there. They treated him pretty badly. They tried to violate his civil rights, and you know, they didn't give him due process in a lot of situations. They were taking his legal paperwork from him. And the guy that supposedly accused him of half this stuff didn't even testify. So I don't know. I don't know what kind of a shot he has at appeal, but he's already appealed. He's working on it. But I don't know what's going to happen. The jury convicted him, gave him 12 years. So if you're in the Texas area and you're good with criminal appeals, you want to hook up with Reggie Johnson. He's got a pretty decent case, but apparently the jury wasn't convinced that he was completely innocent in the whole situation. But I don't know what's going to happen with that or what, whether I'm going to keep working on that too much or not, but I'm going to help out where I can. I know Reggie's a good guy. Whatever happened, whatever he did, I'm sure it was a misunderstanding. I'm sure he didn't mean to, you know, ruin anybody's life, and I'm sure he really wanted to do this camp. But, you know, the law is the law. Shit happens. And, you know, what can you say? What can you do? It's a rough situation. Texas. But, anyway, we're going to publish some stuff on freethechamp.com. A little bit of extra information, and we're going to find out if his address is going to change or whatever, figure out where you can send him letters or whatever. And he'll be in there for at least another year or so, unfortunately, before he gets a chance for parole. But we wish him the best. I don't know if he's listening, probably not, but, you know, if anybody in the Houston area is listening, you know, you can read about it in the papers, but probably don't know the full story. I ended up interviewing Reggie back in 2006, and it's just a real good interview, a real positive guy, and I just didn't believe the story from the get-go. But as I said, shit happens, you know, people do things, you know, circumstances, you got managers telling you what you can and can't do. And then the law with the situation with people making plea bargains, you know, they'll say whatever they have to say to save their own hide. It's just a mess. I mean, that's why I'm glad I don't have to be involved in criminal law. By the way, if you ever want to rent a good movie about this type of stuff, especially in the criminal realm, I just watched this movie last night called True Believer with James Woods and Robert Downey Jr. in it. Must have been made in the 80s, late 80s or early 90s, but great movie, you know. Very, very deep storyline, and it was a great courtroom drama movie. You know, it's like a lot of movies call themselves courtroom dramas these days, but this one was real, for a real good one. It was better than a Law and Order episode. But hey, we got all the combat sports stuff done, so I'm gonna sign off and check the blog tonight. There's gonna be about 6 to 7 new stories up there for midnight Eastern time. And of course, we got to give a shout out to our sponsors, Cocaine Energy Drink, drinkcocaine.com, and the Zions guy at the top of our blog. Click on the big Zions banner. Check it out. Got some products from Zions that he's an old shareholder of the company, and he knows a lot of shareholders out there in Vegas, and he's a good guy in the Zions saga who you should support. And it should tell anybody who's wondering why I have Zions advertisements on my site while I'm suing them what the real story is. So check it out.
Now, remember the moral of the story here. Drink cocaine, the energy drink. Do not snort cocaine, the drug, because that's bad for you. But cocaine, the energy drink, is absolutely good for you.
Yeah. Well, apparently Charlie Sheen had an allergic reaction to drugs. That's why they found him all fucked up in his hotel room a few weeks ago, or a week ago or so now. So somebody I saw on the news was on one of those talk shows was joking that, oh yeah, he had an allergic reaction. He snorted some cocaine and then he sneezed. But he's actually hired a sobriety coach, I heard now, so that he can do his acting, and they don't have to worry about him sleeping with porn stars and having bad reactions to drugs. What a life, though, huh? Must be nice.
You know, it's like you feel spared for some of these guys. You know, all the talent in the world, guys like Charlie Sheen, guys like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and all that, just can't keep straight. You can't keep being sober. I mean, it's sad. I mean,
Robert Downey Jr. is a success story. I mean,
You know what? He's had a lot of problems. I mean, he spent some time really, under the gun, and look, like he's going to lose everything. I mean, he's made a comeback. You know, he's been doing great lately, but you never know. I mean, one false step, and he's back down, and, you know.
Yeah, it's a crazy scenario. That's what money and power does, though, you know. It's the moral of all my stories when I get into it with my investigators.
I wouldn't know any of that. I haven't either.
It's like Macbeth, you know. The thing that I remember most, I mean, I didn't even read most of Macbeth when I was in high school. I had to read it, though, because it was part of my courses. But I didn't even really read it. I just remembered one thing that the teacher said about the story, and it was they were like asking us, what is the fatal flaw of Macbeth? What is his fatal flaw? And his fatal flaw was something that he said in his speech. You know, he had vaulting ambition, was the word Shakespeare used.
I mean, I love William Shakespeare's writing. I mean, I think Shakespeare is awesome. I encourage everybody out there that if you haven't read any Shakespeare for a while, you should read some. And if you have the opportunity to write a paper on Shakespeare, especially Hamlet, you definitely should. Definitely. Yeah. Hamlet, one of the greatest tragedies of all time. If you get a chance, read it and write an essay on it.
Yeah. I had some funny teachers at my high school, too, that there was one in the camp that, you know, the to be or not to be speech meant one thing, and then there was another in the camp that, you know, it meant the other thing. But I was just so fascinated that, you know, hundreds of years after this guy wrote this shit, people are still debating about what it means.
Well, you know what? I was telling somebody a few weeks ago, I'm not going to mention any names, double T, about how great Shakespeare was, or still is, in my opinion. And back when I was in a high school senior, we had, English class, and we had to take parts of Shakespeare and interpret it line by line. And I got paired with the absolute hottest girl in the class. And we got an A for what we did. We were interpreting line by line. And then I heard through the grapevine that she thought I was awesome and she was so lucky to be paired with me doing this project, which is great. But story of my life, the person that told me how great she thought I was her boyfriend, who was also a good friend of mine.
Oh, that's rotten luck, dude. That sucks.
Yeah, no, but hey, if it wasn't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
Right. Well, join the club. Anyway, we're going to sign off. Thanks for stopping by, folks. Thanks for listening in. Next week, we are definitely going to have some type of guest. Glenn Johnson is fighting this weekend, so chances are, especially if he wins, and it's not a, outrageous experience for him, and he's in good shape, then we might be talking to him this time next week. Who knows? But we do have Glenn Johnson's people in contact with us. I pretty much reserved a slot. Fight week is too busy, I guess, so we couldn't get him on tonight. But next week, it's a possibility, maybe the week after at the latest. But we will get him on. Just do it.
Nice. All right, sounds good. Well, have a great rest of the night, and have a great weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Adios.
Later, peeps.